the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Get it either. Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. Glad I cut that one off real quick, ain't you? Alrighty then. Well, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three chat rooms, including TCT Radio. Also, if you get an opportunity, jump over here, check out Haggy Shack Radio. Check out all the other networks that are affiliated. They're doing some fun stuff, cool stuff, informative stuff, and that stuff. So, hi, Thomas and Muddy, how you guys doing?
No.
All right.
I ain't doing nothing this morning. I'm lazy.
Anyway, Muddy's got a toothache. So they're trying to figure out a way to fix his tooth, to yank it, hit it with a hammer, or put some tea bags on it or whatever, something.
Arm and hammer.
Yeah, that'll do it. No, see, back in the old days, you used to tie a string around the tooth and then one to the doorknob and then slam the door. What do you think of that one?
I never could figure out why they tied a rag around their head and made them look like a lop-eared bunny.
I don't know, but that toothache stink. Anyway, speaking of stink, methane, you know, they talk about the cows are producing methane, and that's helping to heat up the doggone planet and all this kind of stuff. It's global warming is one of those stupid subjects that just won't go away. Drives me nuts. But nonetheless, the new guy up there at the White House, I guess he pulled out of the Paris climate change deal, which I'm happy for, because I've been yelling about global warming since I was a little zit-faced science geek. So, with that said, we got some new technology out here, new technology essentially based on old technology, and I'm trying to point out a way that people can rethink on how we actually use electricity and energy for that matter, because we use it so doggone crazy inefficient that you got people out there that really believe that we're tearing up the planet. So, how many cars you guys think is on this planet?
A lot.
You think all those cars are putting out enough carbon monoxide to create a difference in the planet's climate?
I'd say there's about 6 billion. My guess.
6 billion cars. Man, that's pretty good because there's like, 9 billion people on the planet? That means the majority of all the people could own a car.
Yeah, there's usually two or three in every driveway, meaning almost everybody has a car in that family.
Yeah, 6 billion cars, that'd be a lot. Anyway, I don't know what the actual number of cars are out there, but every time you go past a dealership, they got new cars coming in all the time. I kind of wonder what happens to the ones that they can't sell after a while. You ever see where those go?
Well, those are the ones I get.
Man, you got a stockpile at your house you ain't telling nobody about?
No, I just get one of them. It always seems I got the one that nobody else wants anymore.
Well, you got a lot of cars that are running around dripping antifreeze and dripping oil and leaking out all kinds of craziness. You got junkers all over the planet and people's all, you know, there's some places you don't even have to have your car inspected because they got mandatory insurance. That means you don't have to inspect your car. Did you know that?
That's something else.
Yeah. I think Kansas is one of those states where you don't have to have a mandatory inspection. So your car can be a literal clunker and be out there on the road. And that's because you got to have mandatory insurance. So any damage you cause out there when your brakes don't work, then your insurance company have to pay for it. Ain't that nice?
That's nice.
Oh, so you're saying basically they have this giant safety net so everyone will basically be completely irresponsible with how they drive.
Well, you got a point there because I noticed a trend back when there wasn't mandatory insurance in Missouri. People used to drive responsible because they knew that if they got in a car crash, that it could cost them a lot of money through lawsuits and it'd come out their own pocket and they could even lose their house or whatever, you know. And the moment mandatory insurance came in where they knew that everybody was supposed to have insurance, people started driving like crazy people, man. It was, I'm serious, there was a obvious change in how stupid people were when they were driving a motor vehicle. I mean, they just speeding all over the place, cutting each other out, doing that road raging thing, giving each other the finger as they're doing a flyby and stuff. I mean, like, everybody's got insurance, so it don't matter if you get in a car crash, because the insurance company's going to cover it. Well, that gets, that gives the insurance company, they want you to go out and drive crazy, because if you go out and drive crazy, then you're going to have to pay higher premiums every time somebody crashes a car and they do pay off, jacks the price up.
So it also justifies them.
Yeah.
So you're creating by doing so.
If ain't nobody out there crashing, then there ain't no reason for car insurance, is there?
Right.
Well, I found out when I had my cab company, the worst drivers out there were lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
One, they think they own the road, and they don't care because they're going to win in court.
Well, anyway, I don't think cars outside of people driving like madmen are causing any problems on this planet. You know, with the exception of maybe the leaky antifreeze washing down on the, off the streets or the oil or stuff like that, the carbon emissions coming up out of them cars. One of the videos that I posted over there in the chat room, the guy was talking about how the air, because of environmental regulations put out there, that companies and automobile companies and factories and stuff like that had done so much modifications to their machinery and stuff and the automobiles that the air was actually cleaner by the time it was all said and done because of the strict regulations and all that. Now, I don't know. I haven't been out there with a sniffer and trying to see how good the air is, air quality, but if you're running water through your factory and then the water is coming out cleaner than it was when it went in, that's a plus, ain't it? Yeah? No?
I would question their methods of doing the testing because people tend to cherry pick and whatnot, and if they want to look good, then they're going to lie about things, so they definitely have a motive to lie about such a thing.
Well, yeah, but that goes on both sides of the doggone fence on the argument spectrum. There's a lot of people that believe in global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, and then there's the climate deniers such as myself. Yeah, I reject the whole climate change because the Earth is supposedly a sphere, right? And it's supposedly spinning 1,000 miles an hour on its axis going around the sun with a counterweight called the moon. And the moon causes tidal activities on the Earth. Well, as that thing is going around, it causes us to wobble just a little bit, which is going to change the area at which the sun would be actually shining on the ball. So if the sun is shining on the ball, only half the ball is illuminated. That means the other half is in the dark. And when they talk about infrared radiation getting trapped in the atmosphere, I don't know if you ever had an infrared heater, but first off, they take a long time to get the room hot. Once they get them up to temperature, they maintain them pretty well. But the moment you turn that doggone infrared heater off, it's almost instantaneous that room starts to get cold. So, how we're keeping that same type of heat working by the time it gets on the opposite side of the planet when it's nighttime over there, that's pretty impressive, that and considering the fact that we're surrounded by a cold, dark space out there that, there ain't no wall that keeps all this heat up inside there.
No, but not taking into account that it's also a vacuum, and you know that that's basically what makes a thermos work as well as it does at either keeping things hot that are inside or hot or keeping things that are cold.
Yeah, that I guess that's a plus, and whatever heat we're actually grabbing up through the ground and stuff like that during the daytime, all the objects that get hot up, hot during the daytime, have to start cooling down at night, but still you're talking about half the planet is in the dark while the other half is in sunlight.
Well, the thing is, though, if the vacuum is basically keeping that heat from escaping, then the only way to discharge that is by ejecting something off the planet, like, say, infrared radiation.
All right, well, then how...
Then I can see... There's, if you look at all that stuff, there's always a way to basically kind of look through and find... what is it? It's kind of like basically... you go out and you find a cow patty out in the yard and there's a diamond in it. Is the diamond worth any less because it's in the cow patty?
I don't know who'd be out in the farm field digging in the cow patties to check anyway, but all right.
Well, I didn't ask that question. I asked, if you find a gun for some reason in the cow patty, is it worth less because it was in the cow patty?
I don't know.
Well, I know a guy went into the bar and he saw a quarter sitting in the bottom of the toilet there, and so he reached in his pocket and threw some more change in, and then he pulled it out and he said, "What'd you throw more change in?" They said, "I ain't sticking my hand in there for just one quarter."
Man.
I thought you were going to say something about the joke where they basically glue it to the bottom of the thing so that we can tell who's cheapskate. We know who's been digging in the toilet.
All right, look, let's get back to this science thing, man. Digging quarters out of the toilet. Anyway, that's just... You're liable to hear anything on Mad Science. All right, look. First off, carbon isn't... even if it could get up there where they're saying it's going, it isn't like see-through on one side and solid on the other. It's, if it's going to do anything, the first thing it would do would be block out rays of sunlight, just like it does every time a doggone volcano erupts.
Are you accounting for the fact that a lot of the infrared radiation that the Earth absorbs, it's because it takes visible light and absorbs that light and turns it into heat? Because visible light will pass through things that infrared will not, and infrared will pass through things that visible light will not pass through.
If it can't have your cake and eat it too. It's either blocking it out or it's trapping it in.
Did you not listen to what I said?
Yeah, I heard what you said. You're basically saying the same thing of what did.
The frequential differences between one photon and another can oftentimes be one nanometer is all it takes to change a photon, its interaction with an atom from bypassing it, transparency, reflection, reflecting off it like metal, like you're used to seeing visible light do with metal, or being absorbed by it. And raising the electron potential, which is where your infrared heat will come from later. And like I said, one nanometer. That's all it takes.
So there's more ice at the South Pole, and because it's a little warmer, there's less ice at the North Pole, is what to say.
No. It's not because... Well, okay. I'm guessing you're going to say, though, that's because... You think it's that they're trying to say that there's somehow the top is getting more sunlight than the bottom, but that's not it.
Look, I did a video quite some time back said the Earth tilted. All right.
Okay. Why is it that they're saying that it's warmer on the North Pole than the South Pole?
Because
heat goes up.
If the Earth is tilted, look. Go watch my video. The Earth tilted.
What? And when just boil it down. What is your...
I'm trying to boil it down, but you keep interrupting. Look.
And don't say anything about your video. Just tell me what you got to say.
If you shine a light on a ball, and you look at that ball, and you tilt that ball, you can see that the sunlight changes where it's shining down now. It's blatantly obvious. You're getting more heat where you didn't have it before because of that tilt. And so... That's more time for the sun to heat up that area during the time when the sun is facing that side of the planet. So during those times, like at the equator, it's hotter at the equator because of the curvature of the Earth, then that portion of the Earth is a little bit closer to the sun than the, let's say, out there at the North Pole, which is at the top, and then the South Pole, which is at the bottom. And since the South Pole, because it's tilted back in the opposite direction, the South Pole's getting more ice on one side than it would have normally, because it's colder down there.
Well, except that whenever the sun goes, whenever the planet goes around the sun, the bottom's tipped toward the sun just as much as the top is.
Yeah, so it would be a continuous change.
There is.
You got more cars up north. That's all. They don't have any. They don't have all that traffic and people and everything in the South Pole. That's my guess.
There is no top or bottom though in space. We only relativistically see that ourselves because we decide to orient.
Sure, but if it's a globe, the North Pole could be, we could, like, that could be the bottom of there. I understand what you're saying. I get that.
So So your theory about the, you know, getting more sun or less sun isn't really valid in that instance. And I can tell you what the instance is. It has nothing to do with the cars either, because no amount of human interaction, we really don't take up that much space on the planet. If you put us all together, you could fit us all in a, like something like one of the northern smaller states. Every single person stands side by side would fit in a small space like that. The cars that we're using, we could pile them all up into an area that's smaller than the size of Texas. Even with the billions that you're saying that you believe that we have. I'm not sure what the actual number is, so I don't know one way or the other. But I know how big a car is and how big the Earth is. So even if you had one for every person, I know you still couldn't have more than the surface area of a place like Texas. What is different, though, is that water is a great equalizer, and the South Pole does not have water under the ice. It's a big land mass. And the ground, when it gives up its heat, it doesn't tend to absorb it very quickly and hold on to it. Whereas in the north, there's nothing but water underneath that entire cap. So there's warm water working its way up there, and so cold water from up there working its way back down toward the equator due to the centrifugal force of the planet. So you've got a constant circulation of hot and cold going on there, keeping it from getting too cold. And during the summer, it's keeping it from getting as warm as it might possibly get, if you could actually get any sunlight down through that ice to the soil and whatnot that would absorb those visible rays and convert them into heat. Obviously, because it's covered with ice and snow, though, it's all being reflected off of the surface, the majority of it.
Well, sure, and you got the Earth 3/4 covered in water. Now, that's a pretty good sized mirror, if you ask me. So we're sitting surrounded by a cold space. We got the doggone 3/4 covered in water. Only half the planet's in the sunlight at any given time. So we got seismic activity supposedly according to science due to the fact that we got a moon that goes around us that causes the tides and stuff like that and basically flexes the Earth's crust at the same time. Supposedly we have a hot molten metal core in the center of it. And so with that said, we got a little bit of heat up underneath us. We got a little bit of heat from the flexing of the Earth itself for due to friction. We got a little bit of heat stored up during the daytime for sunlight, so when we go around on the dark side, we don't freeze. Otherwise, it get mighty cold at night. But nonetheless, you ain't got enough cars on this planet to cause enough CO2 with carbon monoxide instead of carbon dioxide. You ain't got enough cars on the planet to even scratch the surface of what one volcano would spew out, and considering the fact that there's a bunch of volcanoes that are active still today, they're always spewing crud out. So
what about every time HARP heats up and blows all our O2 way out there in the atmosphere, out there in space? That don't help much.
Well,
I think that calculations they have basically say that we're receiving everything that basically gets blown off by solar rays. We're actually getting just as much, sometimes even more at times. It ends up balancing out, though, of those elements from the sun, with the exception of helium, because it doesn't interact with anything and sink down like oxygen and hydrogen do whenever they react together and create water down into the atmosphere, so they don't get blown away.
The Earth is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It regenerates everything. And when it does get warm enough for the water to evaporate, it goes up and produces clouds, which also block out sunlight. And as that rain's falling, also has a cooling effect. There's a lot of thermodynamics going on that ain't even been talked about, on how this planet heats itself up and cools itself down throughout the natural cycle of things. And so, with that said, we're lucky to have the sun, and we're lucky to have the moon. If this is the actual model of everything, we're lucky to have the system. It's like a miracle that it's the way it is. But as we're supposed to be in an elliptical orbit with the sun, means we don't go in a perfect circle around the sun. Every so often we're going to get further out than we were before, and every so often we're going to get closer in, and so the temperature is going to go up and down throughout this entire cycle.
And they measure that, though. That's just it. They're trying to say that right now, hopefully, that temperature of up and down is going more up and down. Which, I mean, they're right about one thing. A very small change is all it takes to push us over a what they call a cascade failure. So we're not going to see this slow, gradual cooling where basically everything just keeps getting colder and colder and colder and colder. Because that would actually, that would be good, because it means we'd give us a chance to adapt to it. We're going to see things probably get a little warmer, the weather's going to get a little crazier, and in one day, we're literally going to end up seeing people frozen to death with food still in their mouths.
That's
why we need to study the science behind what's actually causing it and stop trying to cast blame everywhere to try to further an agenda to get something right now that you want. Because none of the stuff that these people are screaming climate change in order to basically like get into politics or make money off of things or whatever, none of that stuff is going to help them when something like that hits. The only thing that will save the human race at that point is cold, hard science. And they're totally destroying it by basically making a mockery of it.
Well, they're just...
They can charge you tax for your car because you breathe. They can charge you a carbon tax. You know, hey, they make money. They don't care what the real reason is.
Well, the question, though, is how much money is it going to take to keep you from freezing to death when the temperature drops to 40 below zero on the equator?
They're just fudging the numbers to fatten the wallet. That's the way it's always been. I mean, come on, Al Gore's flying around the corporate jet telling everybody the planet's heating up and the sea levels are going to rise and all that. And then he takes all his money that he makes off of all his shams and buys a 9-bedroom mansion on the seashore. You know, look, if you think that the planet's heating up and you think cars are doing it, then you should be out there in a rickshaw getting to work. Have your buddy pull you one day and you pull them back the other direction, you could carpool with a rickshaw. But
you wouldn't have as much problem with the carbon emissions from cars if it weren't for the fact that they make them purposefully ineffective, so that basically they're wasting gas in forms that if they were fully combusted would be much easier for the planet to consume, because they're basically breathing. If a car is operating properly, everything that comes out of the car is exactly what you put out of your breath, and this planet has basically evolved with all these plants and whatnot specifically to consume that stuff.
Sure, and the whole thing about it, when you're...
Listen, though, when you get a bunch of sulfur or mercury or nitrogen mixed in there and you end up with a bunch of these weird compounds like cyanide and stuff coming off of it, that's not really helping out, because you're actually killing the plants that are there or that are going to be needed to consume the CO2 and the water vapor that's coming off of it to keep everything equalized.
Well, two things. First off, even my crazy idea about everybody running around in rickshaws ain't going to save the planet, because now you're going to be breathing heavier because you're like freaking pulling that rickshaw, especially if you lived in San Francisco. Have you ever been to San Francisco?
I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think if you were running around in rickshaws, you wouldn't have the same problem, unless...
You're breathing out CO2?
That's not the damage, though. That's the whole point. It's not CO2 that's coming off the car that's the problem.
But that's what they said causing the global warming. The CO2, the methane, and...
Who did? Name names, man. I want to know who these scientists are that are saying this.
Well, all of them saying it, except for the ones that are telling the truth.
No. You mentioned Al Gore. Al Gore's not a scientist. So
no, he's an idiot.
Misquoting people, even by accident, he's going to misquote people more than he probably would be misquoting them on purpose.
But nonetheless, if you're trying to go up and down the hills in San Francisco, you're going to breathe heart heavier, and you're going to be putting CO2 out into the atmosphere.
And CO2 will cause plant growth, which will actually consume, because of the human plant growth and all the excess...
Sure, you and I agree on the science, but the doggone other portion of it is... they're putting ethanol inside those vehicles as well, which and then they turn around and talk about how food prices are high. Well, you're wasting a whole bunch of corn trying to make ethanol so that you can, you know, put a little bit of ethanol in there and then you don't have to put near as much gasoline with it.
Well, part of the ethanol, though, is there to keep it from pre-igniting while it's being compressed, because otherwise gasoline would ignite while it's on the downstroke, and you'd end up having to fight that.
Yeah, so
a lot of your centrifugal power that you've got going on there.
If it was engineered properly, from the get-go, and it was injected into the cylinders properly from the get-go, then you would be burning half the fuel that you're burning. You wouldn't even be burning a quarter.
Burn crude oil either. You could literally leave those deposits alone and just run off that ethanol.
Yeah. Well, they said that the automobile is only 36% efficient. So where's the other percentage of your fuel going? It's right out the doggone tailpipe.
Well, it's less than 30. It's more like 5% efficient. That fire in the piston, 5% of that power actually reaches the
world. I'm talking about fuel usage efficiency. You're talking about the energy coming that you're getting off of the actual combustion and then trying to transfer that down through the drivetrain into the rear end to get down the road.
Oh, you're talking just the motor.
I'm just talking about the engine alone and how much fuel is actually wasted, because if you think down inside what's going on inside that piston, the faster you rev that engine, the faster those pistons are going up and down, and you start to lose time that combustion can actually occur inside there. And so that's why you got to get your air to fuel ratio mixed up real good so that you can get a cleaner burn while that thing's revving up really high. Well, even at that point, you're still pushing more fuel out the back than you are burning inside her, because it don't have enough time to get a complete burn. It's happening so fast. So they put a catalytic converter on there to reburn the wasted fuel coming by, and even at that point, there's a large majority of it that's still going out the doggone exhaust. Some of those gas fumes get sucked back up into the intake and reburn a second time.
I was going to say, the catalytic converter thing, actually, the only thing that I've seen different about the chemistry between when it comes out with one versus without one are compounds that you can smell.
Yeah, that's it. It basically looks like a cleaner burn, but in reality, you're not.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, it's a little cleaner, but we're talking, you know, it's like the difference between whole milk, everybody thinks is full of fat, and 2%. Oh, that's got next to nothing. No, there's only 1% difference. Whole milk's only 3% milk fat.
But the thing about it is
the amount of waste that the damaging waste that you're basically eliminating from that content isn't really that effective. It's actually just more of like the catalytic. I'd say honestly, the catalytic converter is to your car's engine and the exhaust that's coming out of it, what that little green tree, that little evergreen tree hanging from your mirror is to the inside of your car.
Well,
just there to make it smell pretty.
Let me tell you one of the main reasons why the whole global warming scam makes me so mad. First off, if you're sitting there and you're saying that the planet is heating up due to carbon emissions, and that's what they said. If you're saying that, and then somebody's sitting around there telling you that we have every single bit of technology to build the perfect engine that will get the best efficiency and the cleanest burn out of it, and you're still standing around complaining about it, and there's no action being taken to literally build an engine with all the engineering skills that we got and tools available today and the technologies and materials, we could build the perfect engines out there. And it ain't happening. Companies are doing the best that they can because it takes a lot of money to engineer a vehicle the way that they are right now. And sometimes, like my grandpa used to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's running, you know, and they run pretty good. They got a lot of horsepower, people buying the things. Nonetheless, they're still not efficient because they haven't been engineered to be efficient. And so, if you're burning gasoline and the majority of your gasoline's going out, the fuel, the guy that's selling the fuel at the fuel station, he's going to be a happy camper because he gets to sell more of his product. And if you got a perfectly clean burn going on, he's going to sell less of his product. So they don't want that kind of technology out there on the market. So with that said, all the back and forth between the big oil and the climate people and such, you know, it's going to continue to go on because these guys are going to fight tooth and nail to keep their product on the market selling better, you know. And if your car is burning less fuel because you got a super efficient engine in there, they're not going to make as much money.
That's actually inaccurate. If your car is running that efficiently, then that means you're going to run that car even more, which means you'll end up still burning all that fuel. You'll just get more use out of your car, which wears your car out faster, so you have to buy a new car sooner.
So that's a plus for the doggone auto industry,
which the oil industry is heavily invested in.
Well, no, that's the whole thing, man. Everything out there, including your oil that you put in your car. You could design that, engineer that car to be so doggone clean burning that you wouldn't even get no carbon blow-by down through your rings and down into the oil. Where do you think that black stuff comes from that takes your oil from nice and clean to a sooty-looking black, and if you don't change it after a while, your oil's all crudded up? Basically turns your oil into sandpaper.
Some of that is partially oxidized iron in the steel of the engine that's shaved off because you ran it too hot, or because there was something off in your vehicle, or it wasn't built properly. So there's, you know, every now and then there's a little nick or a little rough.
Well, sure, but they put in the bottom of the oil pan, they put a little magnet down in the bottom of the oil pan so that whenever any metal shavings come by, it sticks to that magnet. And you can, whenever you go to do an oil change, you can actually inspect to see if anything, you got any metals inside there, because it'll be a little fuzzball on the end of that dang.
Hey, what? The problem with that, though, is you can pull a magnet off of a refrigerator, correct? Can you shake a magnet, stick it to the fridge, and then pull it off with your hand?
Unless you use the ones like I got, and you got to slide them clear across to the edge. I got the neodymiums.
But you can get them off of there.
Sure.
Okay, the oil that's moving through those things is under such high pressure that it's going to knock a lot of that stuff back off of there and get it to recirculate back through there over and over.
But it's not going to knock it all off, and so you'll get an indication that something is going wrong in that engine. But my point is, everything goes to thermal breakdown is when the material that you're using finally reaches a point where the material now becomes soft. And that includes any kind of metal, paper, whatever. There's a thermal breakdown for every material under the sun. And so when the engine gets to a certain temperature, and that metal finally reaches its thermal breakdown, and the softer metal is up against the harder metal, it's obvious the softer metal is going to start to fall apart first. And mm-hmm. So you're going to get those parts down inside the oil. Well, if that engine never reaches the thermal breakdown because the temperature, the heat is being moved away rapid enough to keep that down to temperature, then you won't have the breakdown of the parts. They'll be fine. And the blow-by that you get inside your oil is from whenever your rings, which they're not a perfect seal around those rings. There's a split in every single ring. If you have three sets of rings, there's three splits in that one piston. And so just a little bit of carbon gets blowed past that piston because it's not a perfect seal up inside there. And that's what starts to clog your oil up with carbon. And so you get this black soot build up down inside there, and your oil filter is supposed to pick up that black carbon soot and filter it out, and then your metals or whatever may get scraped, picked up by the magnet, or even caught up in the filter. The problem is, if you drive your vehicle too far on a cruddy filter, you start slowing down that oil can't get through that filter as easy, which is all obviously going to raise the temperature up because it's not getting a proper circulation of the oil. So If you engineer this vehicle from start to finish to have a perfect burn, you'd never have to change the oil. And if you had a proper oil cooler on there, on top of the radiator system that you have in the vehicle, it would never get hot enough to cause any damage to that engine. Heat is what damages every single engine out there, every single electrical appliance, every single solid-state circuitry or whatever. Heat is the big issue why things finally reach their thermal breakdown and fall apart, or burn up, for that matter.
It sounds like you're working hard not to say heat is the enemy.
Well, heat is the enemy. But the thing about it is it really the enemy? Because if you think about it, if you can, with your electric bill in your house, the heating and the cooling are the two biggest drains on your electrical bill. All right, so if you need to keep your refrigerator going, you got to produce heat in order to be able to produce the cold that you can actually, you know, keep your food cold. And for the heating systems that we use, unless you're using something like natural gas to burn natural gas to heat something up, then you're using a resistive load such as a big tungsten element wire going across something around a ceramic that heats the ceramic up, and you have to produce heat in order to be able to, you know, stay warm in the summer or wintertime and cool in the summertime. Well, we know that there's a lot of methods that things that happen that we don't want to happen, like in the car, automobile, and there's certain types of voltages that, like high frequency voltages, that will produce heat, enough heat that will actually burn through insulation on wires, and so we may have been looking at this all wrong though, from start to finish. We can generate heat with low amperage, low wattage, by using a high frequency current going through there. We don't need to have the resistance in order to do it. We can shake those electrons up with a high frequency voltage. Right now, overseas they use 50 hertz. Over here in the States they use 60 hertz. Their stuff seems to last a bit longer because the parts don't reach the thermal breakdown as quick as they would be at 60 hertz, because it's moving faster, producing more friction in the electron flow. So things get hotter over here when we run them. If we were running on 50 hertz, our stuff would last a little bit longer. But here over in the United States, we don't worry about all that, because you go out and buy you a box fan from the Dollar General store for $10, you know, and replace the old junky one. But imagine if you could keep that same fan running forever without ever having that dang thing break down. The only thing that fails in those fans is they got real crummy bearings. Basically, it's like a little brass deal on the end of it that, because it's softer metal, will allow the rotor shaft to spin through it. And if you kept those things completely lubricated, keep them greased up all the time, that portion would never fail. If you kept the temperature down of the actual windings on the rotor itself, or the stator, either one, anywhere where you got copper windings, if you keep the temperature down on that fan to where the insulation on that winding never reaches its thermal breakdown, that fan would last forever. It would never fall apart. As long as the bearings don't fail, as long as the insulation on the wire doesn't fail, that electric motor will last forever. And we've got the technology to literally engineer an electric motor that will either be air-cooled, or, you know, some other way of circulating some sort of coolant through that doggone thing and taking that heat away from that motor so rapidly that it doesn't ever have a chance to reach its thermal breakdown.
Do you know why it breaks down? Because it is old technology. People don't care because they've grown up with this. But back in the day when it was all new, they kept maintenance. They took responsibility.
Yep.
And now we don't, because it's all cheap and we don't care. But I mean, if you did a maintenance, you could, you know, use for decades.
It's brilliant that you said that, Jermaine, because do you remember, have you ever seen any of the old fans from like the early 1900s or even slightly prior?
Yeah.
They got a little oiler on the top of that. And so if you want to keep that thing going every so often, you go up there and squirt a little oil down in there to keep that thing lubricated, and there's fans that were built way back then that to this very day would still run.
Yep.
That's a lot of time out of one fan.
But the engine doesn't take care of itself. You need to take care of it to make it last. Don't think it's self-reliant, because it isn't.
But if
you want to get the most out of it, just do your little bit of effort and do maintenance. And
yeah, your average Joe could do that even with a modern-day crappy box fan. You could take a time to clean it out every so often, keep all the dust off of it so it'd stay cooler, and you could grease up the little slip bearings that's in there, and that thing would last for a lifetime.
But people don't do this.
No, they don't.
The day that you have technology that will take care of itself and will repair itself is the day you're going to have technology that may decide it doesn't want to do what you want it to do anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to say that, like, right now,
that's the truth.
If people are concerned about said climate change, which I'm not concerned about it, not even in the least. I'm just aggravated because the same people who are complaining about this issue, or non-issue, whichever side of the fence you're on, are the same people who will run that box fan until it drops. They won't maintain it like Jermaine said, and they'll run it till it drops. Then they'll go out and throw it in a landfill and go out and buy a brand new one. And there you go. And that's the hypocrisy that drives me insane about the whole climate change issue, is that we're sitting here, we're telling everybody that there are solutions readily available that's been used way back in the 1800s. They stopped putting oilers on fans. Why don't they still put oilers on fans? You know, it wouldn't be hard to engineer it into the new modern day deals to where every so often you could squirt a little bit of lubrication on each side of the rotor shaft to keep those bearings from wearing out, you know. And if the average Joe wanted to make a fan that would, last for a long time, they could do a couple of small little modifications just so that they could get easy access to the ends of those bearings and put some lubrication in there. There's
the oil stuff is better because they all have oil nipples and oil pods.
Yep.
They allow for maintenance.
Well, there's a word out there, a phrase, planned obsolescence, where they literally make things that they wish to fail after a certain period of time. So you got to buy a new doggone light bulb every so often because they'll burn out, or you got to buy a new electric motor or whatever. And so with all that means that more companies are going to have to make more parts and more materials. Raw materials are going to have to be pulled out of the ground. The whole, you could recycle everything that you got at your house. If zero of that was wasted and everything was reused for some purpose or another, we could become such an efficient society. We could have perfect running engines, things that would last for decades. I got a light bulb, one of the old Edison light bulbs, and that thing to this very day still functions. That's because the tungsten that he used in that light bulb is better than the stuff that they use in the modern day light bulbs. And
there was a newspaper about a light bulb in an old farmhouse that was 70 years old.
Still worked, right?
Yeah. It's
there's one in a park house that not only is older than that, but it's been on continuously with only one time that it's been turned off in order to move it.
Yeah.
So
there you go, man. That's why I get frustrated every time this climate change issue, because it's a doomsday prophecy that has no basis in scientific fact whatsoever. And when I was going to school and they was teaching science class, You actually did hands-on experiments. You learned about chemistry. You learned about all kinds of stuff in science class. And so the knowledge that I got when I was a kid is like work that's weight in gold. The knowledge these modern-day kids got, it just not, it doesn't even, it pales in comparison to what we learned back then. Now they're telling everybody that the planet's heating up to because of CO2, they can't even get it right. Cars put out carbon monoxide, not carbon dioxide.
Yes.
And so if you can't even get that portion of it right, and in your explanation, there's so many doggone holes in the dang story, it's just crazy. You know? But if you have access to what you need to fix it, which we're telling you you do, you have had access to it, then, and you're still complaining about it, that to me is the same concept of standing out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying, save the trees. Seriously, if you're going to protest save the trees, wouldn't it be like better to go out and plant a tree? You know, go out and plant a tree if you're worried about the trees, you know, population dropping down out there. But I'll tell you one thing. I know this for a fact. It's been raining like, you know, for way past 40 days and 40 nights out here where I'm living. And you don't mow your grass for about a week or two, and that stuff gets so high your mower can't even go through it. And you leave it alone for several months, and next thing you know, you got trees popping up out there. And if you ain't touched it for a year or so, you can't even walk through there. It's an overgrown jungle. So nature has it under control. So there's a non-issue there that everybody's stressed over that could be, you know, easily resolved. If you don't use it, nature's going to take it back. If you use it improperly, you're going to destroy it early. Everything has a thermal breakdown. Everything. It don't matter what it is. There's a combustion portion of the time when when it gets hot enough that it will basically catch on fire. And so we got the technology to literally use the energy that we use called electricity in a different manner than what we're using it now, and be able to make it so much more efficient than what it is today that we wouldn't have to have all the, you know, power plants burning tons and tons of coal. And even if they were burning tons and tons of coal, there's ways to recapture the waste off of that. We talked about if you take a piece of firewood and you burn that piece of firewood, science says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It just changed chemistry. It just changed to a different state of matter. When you burn it, you made byproducts. You made ash and you made more fuel. And if you utilize what would normally been the trash off of burning your firewood, you could recapture every bit of that doggone material back out and use it in a completely different form of energy. So, I don't know what all the craziness is about out there. We got what we need to fix it. It's just, how do you get mainstream industry to start focusing on literally moving forward? You know, there's companies out there that have brilliant technology. There are companies out there that are replacing people with robotic arms that do welding and stuff, and they can precision make beautiful welds on those things. If you can do that, and if you had CAD programs to where you can 3D model just about anything under the sun, and then some, and the creativity is available out there, you got brilliant minds all over the planet. You put those brilliant minds in the right rooms at the right time, and you could literally redesign and find every single flaw in every single piece of machinery, electrical equipment, and you can resolve the issues. You can move the heat away from those copper windings so rapidly that it will never reach its thermal breakdown, therefore it will never fail. And in the process, the heat that is generated on there could be utilized for some other purpose. Heat and water. While you're running your electric fan, you could take the heat off of that electric fan and warm your water up. What do you think?
Yeah. But like you said, we already have everything to fix it. And my comment to that is, it never left.
Yeah, it's been around. This isn't even new science.
It stays around.
This isn't even new science. When I talk about my plasma reactor, it's based off the old 1800s mercury arc rectifier and what they were accomplishing. It just, whenever I saw that mercury arc rectifier, a light bulb came on in my head and I said, oh my God, if they would have done this back then, you wouldn't even have to have a nuclear power plant anymore. Because you could take high frequency waves and you can energize water so rapidly that you could instantaneously bust it into steam. You can instantaneously ignite water. And so, with that said, the whole purpose of using the highly refined radioactive rods to begin with was to boil water. So we're still boiling water, just like back in the old 1800s where they used to use coal and wood to boil the water. Now they use radioactive material to boil the water. And then only a couple, 2% of the entire radioactive rod, the energy on there, gets used up and the rest of it gets wasted. You see what I'm saying? It's pure ridiculousness. Even the wasted fuel rods, the supposedly spent fuel rods, are still radioactive and still releasing energy. So you could take those fuel rods and you could reuse that energy there. We supposedly sent a probe all the way to Pluto. Realize how many miles away they say that planet is? Alright, it's so far away that if you're standing on it and looking back at the sun be like a little dot in the sky, just like what you see up there on the doggone sky when you go outside at night. And so, they took a piece of uranium, plutonium, or whatever, made essentially a radioactive core, put it inside a thermal generator, and was able to, 9 years after they sent it out into space, be able to, when they finally got there, produce over 200 watts of power to run all the instruments and cameras and radio equipment to send the signal back to us to give us a picture of what that place looked like. Now, if you believe what they say about what and the pictures that you get when you got back there, then that's some really impressive technology. The rovers that they got on Mars, you know, hey, they're still, some of them still running today. They were only supposed to have a short lifespan. They're still going. That's some impressive technology. And they say it costs millions and millions of dollars to do all this stuff in space. And we're talking trillions and trillions of dollars that mainstream industry has at their disposal because everybody keeps buying their junk. That they could actually do serious research and put things on the table that would last a long time. But it all falls back to money. Plain and simple. Every problem we got all out there falls back to money. You either ain't got enough money to do what you need to do, or whatever, man. It drives me nuts. It drives me flat out nuts. You know, somebody said that over in Europe they have a light bulb that will literally last for 10 years. That's a pretty good light bulb.
Yeah.
How come we ain't got them over here in the States? Nobody know that? A lot of the newer LED technology that they got, light bulbs actually getting a little bit cheaper now, they say those will last for quite a long time. Now, that's what I like, things that are going to last. Because the less that you have to make of them, the more natural resources you don't have to pull out of the ground. I mean, that just makes common sense to me. So, Muddy, you still there? No. How's that tooth doing? Huh. Everybody went silent on Skype. So anyway, what do you think, Thomas? Are you there? and y'all killing me. Anyway, we have the technology available to us. The question is, when is humanity going to start using it? When are they going to stop complaining about the doggone planet and start cleaning up the planet? When are they going to stop complaining about so-called global warming and start building efficient machines that will be using less fuel? If the power plant doesn't have to use as much fuel, and your automobiles don't have to use as much fuel, your generating systems don't have to use as much fuel, then I would think that that would be a better deal. And if they're all burning clean and you ain't got no carbon emissions coming out of them to begin with, then you ain't got no problem. But ironically enough, people always find a way that magically carbon emissions can cause a big catastrophic world change out there and just take science into a new state of ridiculousness. Because, first off, we're told that CO2 is heavier than oxygen. We're told that carbon monoxide is heavier than oxygen. See, carbon dioxide has two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom. Carbon monoxide has one oxygen atom connected to one carbon atom, both of which are heavier than oxygen. And so if 10,000 feet is the highest that you can go without supplemental oxygen, and then 14,000 feet, it gets thinner and thinner, and by the time you're up to 30,000 feet, you not only got to have a pressurized cabin, but you got to have oxygen supply, and you got to have doggone carbon scrubbers to keep everybody from suffocating each other, from breathing up all the oxygen in the air. So if that is the case, how is it that what they say is getting up there into the atmosphere is literally polluting or basically causing the planet to heat up? It's ignorance. That's what it is. Pure ignorance. And if you understand how this Earth is supposed to work, according to the science that you're told, then you should understand that we're lucky to have heat on this planet. And things grow better when they're warm, and things grow better when there's more CO2. If what I'm saying is wrong, then somebody needs to rush down to their local greenhouse and ask them to stop putting CO2 in high concentrations inside their greenhouse so that their plants can get fatter. Because if that thing ain't perfectly sealed, then that means some of that carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide is escaping up out of that greenhouse and getting into the atmosphere, and we're all going to heat up and die. That it don't take no 20 years to boil a pot of water. And this has been way past 20 years. So this is the slowest apocalypse that we've ever headed towards. This is the slowest doomsday that we've ever headed towards. If you actually go back and listen to what I said in that video, and it's been quite a long time since I did that video saying Earth tilted. They said on TV that because of a massive earthquake in Haiti that our Earth actually tilted, which is pure ridiculousness. But, hey, give them their due. Nonetheless, the Earth tilted. So either it was a natural cycle going around the sun with our moon as a counterbalance that caused the Earth to tilt. For whatever purpose, the Earth did tilt. And back then I said, you watch, there will be some really crazy weather. There are going to be earthquakes where there weren't earthquakes. There's going to be things going on because when you make a big shift in which direction the wind is going or where the water is or where the sunlight, all that makes a difference in temperature in the general vicinity of where all this is going on. That's why it's always hotter at the equator, because if the Earth is a sphere like the science book says, then that means the curvature on that side, the Earth equator, is closer to the sun than obviously either one of the poles. So wherever the majority of the sunlight stays is where it's going to get hotter. And that's how the weather works. And you can see when you shine the light on the basketball, like I'm showing in the video, you can see when you tilt that thing, it changes. It changes the weather patterns from top to bottom, because now you got cold where you didn't have cold, and you got hot where you didn't have hot, and so on. It's basic science. But somehow or another, we just forgot about basic science. They stopped teaching basic science. Now they're out there saying, oh, well, the science says, and the debate's over. Really? I don't even remember the doggone debate ever even starting. All I remember is a bunch of people saying that the planet was doomed, and the planet's still here. Many, many, many years later, the planet's still here. They said the sea levels are going to rise and this and that. There's going to have to be something seriously, drastically changed in order to destroy this planet. And mankind just isn't capable of doing it. You stop using a piece of property, nature takes it right back. And there ain't not one thing that we've ever put on this planet that wasn't here prior to us. You take all the chemistry you want, mix it all together, it doesn't matter where you put it. Eventually, nature will break it back down into its normal components. Nature always finds its balance. And so if you want to have your habitat that you live in be clean and fresh and all that, then you got to work in harmony with nature. You got to stop dumping crud into your waterways. You got to give nature a chance to do what nature does without interrupting nature. And if you want to drive an automobile, then you make that automobile so incredibly efficient that you're not making nature have to work harder in order to get the stuff cleaned up again. It just drives me nuts. Just drives me flat out insane. Any of you guys still there? No. They all must have had to go get a coffee break, which I may have to do myself. But if we rethink on how we use electricity, that's a big step. There's a lot of things that would have normally been wasted, and a lot of things that would be the big bad whoop, so to speak, of energy, you know, and machinery. Is that heat can be your worst enemy. It can be your best friend. If you use it properly, you could take the heat off of every transformer out there. There's waste energy coming off of it, you know. And if you wanted to keep it cool inside, but you're running 10 computers that are producing heat, you're running all kinds of transformers or power supplies or ballast in your lighting and stuff, all of that extra heat is what that air conditioner has to work against in order to be able to keep the house as cool as you want it. And so if you make it to where that every bit of heat is transferred out away from your inside of your house, then that air conditioner obviously doesn't have to work near as hard. Your refrigerator and your freezer in your house contribute to your electric bill, because your air conditioner has to compensate for those coils that are on the back of those freezers and refrigerators, because as the refrigerator or the freezer is running, the compressor inside there is compressing the gas, which causes it to get hot. That heat has to be transferred away, and then it goes out the back coil of your refrigerator. So if you put your hand on the back of your refrigerator, you'll see that it's hot back there. Now, if you modified your house to the extent to where now you could vent that heat out of your house instead of into your living quarters, then your air conditioner doesn't have to work near as hard in order to be able to keep it cool inside there. There are so many methods by which you could make the perfect efficient house, it's just ridiculous. Your air conditioner, if you go outside and you stand behind that while that thing's running, you'll notice that there's a lot of heat outside. It's taking all the heat from the inside and it's moving it outside. And it's taking the heat from the how the actual compressor is circulating the gas around, compressing the gas and then sending it through an exchanger, and that heat as well is transferred outside. But nonetheless, if you got things inside your house that are releasing heat, then that heat has to be pulled out somehow. So it ain't that we can't do it. It ain't that we can't make a super efficient house. It ain't that we can't make a super efficient generating system. It ain't that we can't make a super efficient electric motor, a super efficient internal combustion engine. It's just that people have to take all these pieces of the puzzle, re-engineer it, get into a shop and build the doggone thing, show the proof of concept, get it out there to the people, and try to get them interested. A lot of people don't care if it's efficient as long as it works. All they know is that when they walk over to the light switch, they flip that switch and the lights come on. They walk over to the sink to get some water and they turn the hot side on and they got hot water. They turn the cold on and they got cold water. That's all they care about. They don't care about the efficiency of how that actual water heater works. They don't care where the electricity actually comes from. All they care is that whenever they turn the light on or turn the water on, they get instant gratification, and there you go. So, the whole climate change slash global warming slash whatever is a complete and utter scam, a waste of time. It's pure ridiculousness, not based on actual science. And no matter how hard you try to turn and twist and argue the science of it, the basic science is going to win out if you actually paid attention. There's certain things that just don't add up whenever they start trying to tell you that the planet is doomed. Period. You're not going to run out of oil. It's not possible. It's not physically possible for us to ever, ever, ever run out of crude oil. So this argument's going to go on and on and on and on for decades until finally somebody decides, well, enough's enough. Here's a machine that is efficient. This engine runs on water. Plain and simple. So, they call it fossil fuel, which is a crock. But nonetheless, let them have their fun with it. Let them put the dinosaur on their gas station. Let everybody continue to fight over oil for generations to come. Even though the truth of the matter is, the scarcity of any mineral on this planet is just pure stupidity. It's ridiculousness. It's all still here. Every last bit of it. And it doesn't matter how many firewood you burn, unless you can somehow or another magically rush around, chop out every single tree, and kill off every single root on this planet. You can't tear it up. However this planet got here, it is a miracle of epic proportions. It is a self-contained biosphere of such unimaginary. It's, man, just the thermoelectric generation portion of the deal. Everybody sits there and wonders why the Earth has a magnetic field that surrounds it, called the magnetosphere. And basic science tells you how to get electricity from heat. Any two dissimilar metals put to some heat will literally produce an electric charge. And so if you think about all the materials that are in the Earth's crust, metals, crystals, whatever, there's temperature differences all over the place. And so this Earth is generating electricity of epic proportions. Enough so that it's literally got lightning bolts striking in the air all the time. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, there's a lightning bolt somewhere on this planet. And so in the process of that, it's producing more ozone. It's putting it into the atmosphere that acts as a barrier from radiation from space. And all that electricity flowing around produces a massive magnetic field that surrounds our Earth, which basically acts as a second barrier from all the energy coming from space. So whoever or whatever designed this planet had brilliance beyond any of man's comprehension. It's just an incredible, beautiful machine. And when mankind decides to work with it, then mankind's going to be comfortable. When mankind decides to keep on fighting against it, then that's that. It's as simple as that. This old commercial way back in the day says it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. You want to tamper with nature, then you got to expect you're going to get slapped back down. Any of you guys still there?
No.
No. So, what do you think we can do, man?
I don't know.
Do you think we can save the planet from global warming? I think
it depends on how bad the global warming is going to be, because we can't really have much of an effect on things. So
I'm not even remotely stressed about global warming. The only thing that ever bothers me is when it gets back around to the cycle of the cooling torches, because I hate being cold. And, you know, like the last mini ice age was way back in the 1800s.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember seeing all this information that basically indicated that the Earth is actually slowly drifting away from the sun. So that means that basically at some point, if we are suffering through some sort of global warming issue, whenever it relents, the temperature the Earth should be at because of the drift that it has undergone is going to suddenly snap and take full effect. Again, like I said, food still frozen in people's mouths. It's still fresh in their mouths whenever they're frozen solid, you know? So.
That stinks, man.
Unlike dinosaurs and mammoths, woolly mammoths, though, we've got the ability to build starships. So, you know, if that happens to us, we deserve it.
But why?
Species, you know, not individually, but as a species.
But why isn't mankind, like, really seriously into trying to boldly go where no man's gone before? See, there's a lot of excuses why we haven't been back to the moon. We should be crawling all over the moon right now. We should be people actually living on the moon. We got the technology to do it.
I think it should have probably several different space stations that are in a permanent, stable orbit that don't require fuel to basically keep making adjustments and whatnot. They're basically just as stable as the moon, you know?
Well, if there's as much radiation in space as they say there is, then you've got more than enough energy to not even have to have any fuel on that thing. I mean, that's enough energy to do all kinds of things.
Well, I'm talking about for moving things around and stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, you can take a negative ion generator will produce an ionic wind. They got ion drive systems that they could be working with that would literally use electricity. Huh?
Hold on. All that requires mass, though, which means you still have to have some sort of physical fuel to work with, whether it's combustible or not.
No, you could use solar power to literally energize the shell of whatever craft you want to fly in, and you could energize that shell to produce a ion wind around that deal that would basically make it fly through space.
Hold on, you still keep missing the point of part of what you're saying there. Wind. ions or the ion engines that you're thinking of that they could use to basically move around with are actually ionizing particles so that they eject out of the back of the exhaust at high speed so they don't have to actually combust it.
Sure, but you could also do the same thing to the shell because out there in space...
Well, listen, they're doing the electromagnetic the electron equivalent of magnetic propulsion, where you basically propel like a projectile or something using magnets, but instead you're using electron potentials.
Yeah.
On the particle and on the barrel to basically accelerate the particle.
There's tons of micrometeorites and gas and particles in space that you could literally...
Strong though, none of that has a very strong force. That's only useful for continuous use, where you just keep piling on top of what you already have.
What I'm saying is, you can pick your fuel up on the way by.
You're missing my point though. That is not strong enough for a course correction in the middle of space if something severe needs to be altered to keep your vessel from basically collapsing on the planet.
See, I don't believe that.
And you can't land with it.
I don't believe that.
That I've had a chance to test and get my hands on indicates you cannot use that technology for that. It's only useful for going between stars or between planets.
Once you get into the atmosphere, if there's oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen in the atmosphere, you could pick your fuel up on the way in. And you could do it on such rapid, on demand. You could instantaneously use the power that you could generate by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, you know, you just can't get enough power out of it. No, it's because they engineered it to do so.
No, I don't think there's as much oxygen and hydrogen in the air as you think there is, compared to what you use for an actual, like a booster rocket.
Well...
There's a reason why it's a gas and the stuff that they use for fuel is a liquid.
Birds have a really cool tendency to be able to, like, just put their wings out and glide. They don't even have to flap very often.
But they're not moving fast enough to burn up from friction on the atmosphere as they move through it.
And that's, you wouldn't have to move that fast either. There's technologies available that can manipulate.
Between two stars, though, you're going to have to build up some serious speed, or else you're going to have to extend your life to where you're literally going to be ready to kill yourself out of boredom because you've been alive for so incredibly long while there's been nothing to do but just drift through space just to get to another star. So either speed or insanity. I mean, what's your choice, you know? And if you've got the speed, then that means you have to have something that can rapidly decelerate you if you make any mistakes.
Sure.
About such a long distance, it takes, like, you know, we're talking like 100 points beyond a decimal could be off, and that'd be enough to cause you to require almost 4 or 5 times the amount of power that you thought you were going to need in order to keep from missing your mark.
But you could still do it. It's still, the physics are still there. The science is still there. You could still do it. Have you ever, like, really paid attention to what is...
I'll wait for you to say your catchphrase.
Which is what?
You could still do it. It's not rocket science. Actually, it is rocket science.
Well, technically it wouldn't be if you were talking about ion drives because it's not a rocket anymore. But, nonetheless, if you take two magnets and you put the opposite fields against each other, these things will suck together instantaneously. Snap. Alright? You put them in the opposite direction, the same thing happens, but in the opposite way. They push each other apart. And so we know how magnetic fields function. And we know that all these planets and stars out there have magnetic fields. And so we could bounce from one field to the next. And by the time you got around there, you reverse that field around and slow that thing down instantaneous. It could be done. Just depends on how much imagination a person wants and how far you're willing to go as far as engineering things. You know, right now, if people from 100 years ago seeing us talking on these computers right now, they would be in a maze. This would be witchcraft to them, because how is that? It's a magic box that you can talk to somebody you can't even see, or you can see with a video camera on the other side. This was unheard of back then. But now look at it. And I'm saying, with the access to the technology that we have right now, there ain't no reason why we couldn't do interstellar travel with such precision. We got capabilities of building quantum computers, for Pete's sake, that could literally do all the calculations. When they went to the moon, they didn't have... it wasn't even really a computer. And they were able to transmit information from the Earth to the deal and have this thing perform functions that were able to mathematically land them on a specific spot on the moon. And they got out and did their thing. That was in 1969. Now you got a computer in your hand, if you own a cell phone, that has multitudes times processing power that they even had contemplated back then. The computers used to take up rooms and warehouses. They were huge, and they didn't have that much processing power. In the 70s and 80s, they had a 286 computer with a 20 meg hard drive on it. Now we got 20 gig hard drives, 64 gig hard drives, 100, 500 gig hard drives. We are able to store 64 gig on just a little bitty stick, a USB drive. So as far as processing power, we could build the computers to be able to calculate all the functions necessary, and even down to the smallest molecule, tell that machine what to do and when. The nanotechnology that's available these days, that some of the black projects that they like to call them, a lot of the nifty planes that they fly around and test, the UFOs that people are seeing, are more than likely our own machines. So I guess it's all an impatience thing, because when I was a kid watching the Jetsons and they were flying back and forth to work and living on houses that were floating above the ground, I was thinking, man, by the time the year 2000, we're all going to be driving around in flying cars. Heck no. When we got to the year 2000, we were all still riding around in the equivalence of a rickshaw. And they were still complaining about it. Thomas, you know there's still laws on the books that makes it illegal to drive an automobile through certain cities? Thomas! See, it's a fact. Look it up. You'll find out. There are certain cities where it's still illegal to drive an automobile through the city. That's how crazy this world is. Sometimes they're just kept on the books for historical values, but nonetheless, if the law is the law and you're not supposed to drive your vehicle through there, then that means everybody, including the law enforcement's, breaking the law just by driving through the city. You're supposed to get out of your vehicle and have a horse-drawn team drag the thing across to the other side, and once you're outside the city, then you can fire it back up and go on your merry way. We don't have an energy crisis. We got a common sense crisis. We don't have a global catastrophe on the way via man-made carbon emissions. If anything, we'll blow each other up with nuclear bombs and such. And we'll pollute our oceans, and we'll pollute our waterways, and we'll make everything stink and so toxic to us that we can't survive on it. But the reality of the matter is, because of the way that this system was designed, because of its complexity and all the vast resources that the system itself has and utilizes on a daily basis, long after we the people are gone off of this planet, the Earth will still be here. Unless for some weird reason some big massive rock from space comes in and blows this thing completely apart, or strips the atmosphere completely off the planet, then this planet will always be here. Scientists like to say that Earth's been around for millions and billions of years. It took us a long time to get our act together. If the planet's been around that long, then good chances are it'll be around a lot longer. And so if mankind, which has the average lifespan of anywhere from 60 to 100 years if you're lucky, and if there's 9 billion people on the planet, a lot of which are so incredibly brilliant that if they were ever actually utilized for a resource such as mind power, there ain't no problem that we the people couldn't solve. Right now, we have the capabilities of making our own personal homes so incredibly efficient that we can save ourselves a lot of money. And if you had a community of people willing to do that, and every bit of resource that you saved money on, you could take those then funds that if you were paying $300 a month for a light bill, imagine that $300 going into a community fund to where now you can further research for, you know, making things yet even better. So where the average Joe by themselves couldn't afford to do all the things that I'm talking about doing, if the average Joe realized that they had the capability of doing so, as long as they worked together and pulled the resources, there is nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, that could not be accomplished. You're only limited by your imagination. And if you believe that the laws of physics are so written into stone that there ain't no way that you're ever going to fly, well then, brother, sister, you ain't going to fly. Period. If the Wright brothers would have listened to the naysayers, you wouldn't be getting on a jet going to your vacation. Period. You'd still be in a covered wagon or potentially an old steam engine or something. But because of the people in the past, that all the big names of all the inventors of the world that stepped outside the box and put something together and showed the world that it works, a man named Nikola Tesla showed us how to literally harness the power of lightning. Showed us how to wirelessly transmit energy, and so now we know that we can literally transmit sound waves, radio waves, all kinds of waves in all kinds of different directions, and not only send that energy out, but send data along with it. We're able to put computers with ones and zeros, and that computer can understand all these ones and zeros to the extent to now you got a whole complete alphabet on your keyboard, which can basically go in multiple languages, has numbers and everything. And they're getting to the extreme to now where you're going to leave, you talk to your computer. Your computer will ask you what you want to do next, and you'll tell it, and it'll understand your language. It will learn your voice. Try it. Call up the doggone any business nowadays. 9 times out of 10, you get a digital voice on the other side and ask you what you want. The computer is doing all the work. There ain't an operator sitting there. If you get a live person on the other phone, then you're one of the lucky few who was able to get past the electronics, because normally the electronics will run you around in circles and tell you to go on the internet and search for your answer. We have amazing technology. We have technology that is beginning to surpass all of humanity. So it is a key deal here. Are we going to be the ones in charge in the future, or are the computers going to be the ones in charge of the future? If we're going to give all of our power to said representation up there of the world out there and allow them to regulate us out of knowledge that could have been beneficial to not only feed, house, and clothe all of humanity and use our resources, natural resources, in such an efficient and fair manner, and to be extremely respectful to the process that nature's already has in place. If we learn to work in harmony with nature and we can utilize the forces of nature, we know how nature reacts when we do certain things. And when you throw nature off balance, nature will always push back. And then when the process of pushing back, you use that force to get work done, a.k.a. electricity. Now, we can take and use that electricity in a completely different fashion. And there would be no more of concern about heat generated in the process, which normally would have been the enemy of that machine, becomes now the friend of that machine. Science says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but you can change the form of that energy. You can change the state of that matter. You could energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. You can pull heat off of that. You can pull radiant energy off of that. You can pull visible light off of that. There's so much that you can do with plasma technology and all the basic science that we already have access to. So, when people tell me about global warming and climate change and trying to charge me a carbon tax when I've been studying science all of my life and I understand mechanical forces, I understand the physics, and they say it can't be done, it's only because they don't believe it can be done, that they won't even try. That's that simple. That's why the smart people are on the top and have the biggest bank accounts. That's why the small people are still on the bottom. Because you're willing to pay to go to that light switch and flip it on so that you can see where you're going. When, if you took the time to listen to these podcasts and to do a little bit of research, you might find out that you can do things a heck of a lot simpler and a heck of a lot cheaper, and be able to store yourself some funds up that you can then reinvest into whatever it is that makes you happy. We got the answer, folks. Gonna take a quick music break and refresh the coffee, and then be back and go for the last hour of Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. Check out Haggy Shack Radio and TCT Radio and all the other affiliated networks out there. There's links galore on this website and pictures and ideas. And just scroll back through the chat room and you'll find all kinds of information, because we've been pumping this information into the chat rooms for so long. It's all out there in cyberspace. We're gathering together in our little corner of the world and sharing it with each and every one of you freely. That's what we do here. Peace and love, everybody.
It's true reality. A portable television studio.
Generate the 1.21 gigawatts. generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What'd you say? What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
What did I just say?
A bolt of lightning.
What'd you say?
A bolt of lightning.
Thank you. Jabu came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled through the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one, setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun, children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Made of light hit the ground. Everyone felt the sound of their heartbeats. Every man, every woman, every child. They guessed the limits of imagination. To the door, to the world, come another time. Journey of a thousand lives.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911 as well. Anyway, we talked about all kinds of stuff here on Mad Science, mostly about the whole global warming scam / whatever craziness. The only reason why it even makes me mad to begin with is because everybody says that there's all kinds of problems in the world, and I'm saying we got all the solutions to fix all these problems in the world. And even went into graphic detail of some of the amazing technology that makes all this even possible. So with that said, you know, back in 1969, they used a really crummy computer to go to the moon, is what they said. And so right now, I'm thinking, hey, we got all these supercomputers in our hand that we call cell phones. Imagine what we could do there today. Heck, at the very least, you'd think that there would be a company out there that would take that to the extreme and take and put robotic and remote control drones up there where you could drive around on the moon and look and do experiments live from your computer. Realize how many people would actually get online to be able to drive a remote control rover around the moon? Heck, we could even engineer machines that would be repairing these things when they broke down. It's a world we limited by our imagination. You know, Stephen Gibbons posted a really cool link in there. Diamond needles emitting electrons and stuff. And by putting light on these, it's releasing the charge and all that. It's just new science and physics that they're researching on. There's so many different things. It's just amazing. Now, it's one of the reasons why I love the people that listen to these shows out here and get involved in the chat rooms, because they put really cool information in there about new research, old research, and relevant subjects to whatever the show's being talked about. We not only got an awesome crew here, we got awesome people that show up in the chat rooms, brilliant minds, and they're all trying to give you as much information as possible. See, in this little corner of cyberspace called Shaziz Radio, we've gathered tons and tons of information, and it's all in the chat room. You can go up there to the little chat, which is like a Chatango chat up there, and you can scroll all the way up, and it'll give you an option to look at the previous comments up there. You can go to the previous 35, and then when you get on that one and scroll through all those, you can go back and keep on going back. And all the links to videos and links to websites that we had posted throughout the time of this deal, they're all there, you know, written on the wall in cyberspace. And so we're standing right now at a crossroads as the people of the earth having the opportunity to have the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, and there ain't nothing that we can't accomplish. We just got to get past the common sense of it all. You know, we got to get back to teaching our youth of the day the real science of the world and, you know, how to do real scientific experiments and not just, you know, somebody who's willing to step outside the box and question what they're being taught. Those are the brilliant individuals that we need to motivate on this world. Because those are the individuals who make the sci-fi happen. You know, science fiction movies, especially with space. I love space-based science fiction movies because it shows all kinds of futuristic technologies what could be. You know, time travel and all that kind of stuff, and interdimensional travel. You know, I used to like watching the movie Sliders, or the series Sliders, where he would be hopping from one world to the next, and each one of these worlds had a slight change from the one prior. He was just trying to find his way home, but it was cool to see all the different changes of all the different possibilities out there in the world. And we're not limited. We're only limited by our imagination, because if you can dream it, you can build it. This Earth, I've said so many times on here, is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It cleans itself. It does all kinds of cool stuff. It produces so much energy, more energy than you could ever use in a trillion, trillion lifetimes. And if properly utilized, all the hard work's already done for you. So that gives you time to create. That gives you time to design. Now imagine if the people of the world realized that we're in this just wonderful zone right here that's going to provide every bit of materials necessary to do whatever it is that we want to do to try to become the best that we can possibly be. You know, I'm not into trying to merge man with machine and take away our humanity, but it's a possibility in the future that, you know, people that can't walk would be able to walk with some sort of smart prosthetic that would literally give people who would normally be mobilized in a wheelchair the opportunity to walk around. And we even have the capabilities of literally building machines that will go in and repair the cell at a cellular level and make the person be able to heal themselves. Or we could just teach people how to learn from nature and let nature do the healing. You'd be surprised at what medicines are in every direction that you look. There are so many different things that nature has provided for us that it is just mind-blowing. You can get on the internet and you can search up natural cures all day long and you will never ever scratch the surface of what all is available out there. But just bringing that information to the table and showing everybody, look, you know, why go to the doctor and get this synthetic drug that could potentially cause you liver damage and all these other side effects, not excluding death, whenever you can go over there and nature will take care of that problem for you. See, sometimes you got to look back to some of the people in history and the cultures that they learned things throughout the time while they watched and they studied how nature did things and they studied on how to heal one another. We got the power to heal each other. We got the power to make the tools to make more powerful tools to build incredible homes and vehicles that we can literally do amazing things. I'd like to someday see a knowledge-based society where everybody, including the ones that would be classified not very bright, you know, even the weak had a purpose where they would be able to feel useful in society. Because we could do it. Everyone on this planet is a piece of the puzzle. We all have talents. We all have skills. There's things that people that you don't think are so bright that can do that you can't do. See, the creator of this planet did something amazing. Put all the different talents and all the gifts of everything into so many different people out there. Scattered it throughout all the land. And even when you try to kill each other off, a new baby's born with that same talent. Brilliance. And so if you're ever to reach the ultimate stage of enlightenment and bring your society up to literally bring about a heaven on earth or a utopia, so to speak, it's going to take all of y'all to get the hint. Each one of you are a piece of the puzzle, and when you put those pieces of the puzzle, you get the big picture. Petty says in the chat room, we need to decide it's time when the people of the earth come together. There are no limits to what we can do. It is the people's mind that are the creators of the tomorrow's miracles. That's true. That is so right. When technology is created for benefit instead of greed, then we can heal the world. Then we will know the true peace. A world based on benefit will end the current toxic profit system, and doing so will end a lot of the diseases and suffering that we are currently dealing with. I love that lady. I'll tell you what, the brilliance. You just look out here at some of these people that end up on the Mad Science Show and the Knights of the Round Table and the shows that they do on their networks and stuff. And those are the people we're trying to bring to the table. And we've been successful to bring a lot of brilliant people around. Because where my weaknesses are their strengths, and vice versa. And we help each other, and we share knowledge with the people out there of this world, that if you're willing to listen to it and you're willing to share this information, we can throw that pebble in the pond and send it out until it becomes a big wave that turns into a tsunami and sweeps the land, and everybody gets the idea. Now, we know we got the power to fix it all. We really do. We got amazing technology. We've got old technology from times gone by that people have long lost and forgotten technology. And it's not the technology that's the problem. It's the greed and the ignorance of man to think that man is, all powerful and we're just, do whatever we want. You can't fight with nature and expect that nature is not going to fight back. Nature will always fight you. If you're interrupting the system, then you'll find out the system will interrupt with you. Now, with all the technology that we've got available, and with mankind's need to want to try to excel as a species or a being or whatever you want to say, if we want to finally reach the ultimate stage of enlightenment and actually be able to literally bring about a heaven on earth or a utopia, to be able to reach our farthest goals, to be all that we can be, then we got that capability. And we can utilize all the knowledge of all the things that we've learned throughout the entirety of history and everything that man has endured to this exact point in time and space. And now we're standing here at the golden era where we have access to knowledge that it's just mind-boggling. Cyberspace is so incredible. We got room out there to store tons and tons, where a library in a building, you can get so many books in that building and you ain't got no more room. But out there in cyberspace, we can store tons and tons and tons, and yet even more. And if we need more space, we just build it. It's incredible. We can put books, so many books out there, so much information out there. And if people know where to find it, like here on ShazizRadio.com or TCT Radio or Haggy Shack Radio or all the other affiliated networks out there, if you know where to look, you just go up in the chat room. There's brilliant people like Stephen Gibbons, throws links in there all the time. Sometimes I wonder how he finds stuff as fast as he does. The guy is good. It's incredible. That's what we do here. We share information with one another. We share our love. We share our resources. We share our ideas and our thoughts and dreams and hopes and lives. Man, you don't get no better than that. It's a family kind of scene going on. And we got people from all different directions. People from all different walks of life. We got people all over the world. So, I'm going to see if I can add somebody up in here. I got Raymond in here, but I think he's got his microphone muted. He had a little issue going on there a minute ago, so let's see if I can add somebody in here.
Good here.
Are you doing all right?
Oh, yeah. Somehow I haven't got a manicure lately.
Yeah?
For really long, and I accidentally scratched my throat.
Yikes.
I mean, everywhere.
Well, don't cut your own throat.
Now.
How's it going, Patty? Are you there? Yeah, turn that microphone on, lady.
Morning, Patty.
She'll talk when she's ready. Anyway, folks, we got such an opportunity right now.
Yeah, I had to switch my head.
Well, welcome. How you doing?
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm telling everybody about the opportunity we got right now. You think they ought to take advantage of it? Radio okay. Silence.
can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
What a wonderful morning, Chess. I mean, I woke up, got my cup of coffee, turned it on, ran over to Shaziz Radio, to the chat, and first thing I hear is Molly Hatchet in the morning and Shaziz with my cup of coffee. How awesome is that?
Yeah, that'll get your toes tapping, won't it?
Yes. And then right after that, Children of the Sun. Hey, Muddy, thanks for that. I mean, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to go now.
Yeah. But we're like we got an opportunity right now as a race of beings that if we was to exercise this opportunity to its fullest potential, I don't believe that there's anything in this world that we couldn't accomplish. What do you think?
I agree 100%. We've never realized what we are totally capable of, Shaziz. I mean, we've been geared to this profit society for so long, and the things that the technology that we've created under this greed society is amazing. I mean, when you look at the technology that's been created, but this is nothing, because all of this that's been created in this profit society has been created for an agenda, and it's a small, narrow window of creativity that they allow us to create within.
Well,
but
yeah.
If those barriers were removed,
yeah,
then there would be no end to the technology that we could create, and a beneficial technology, you know?
Yeah, part of that agenda is to try to convince us that we're powerless against the system and we need help. We need the daddy and the mama of government over there to take care of us. You see, and that's where their agenda is, basically stepping on all the people. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, and that's what they have done for so long. That's how they have controlled what we put out. If you look at the history, I mean, you can see it plain as day. Tesla. You know, his inventions were denied. They were stolen. They were co-opted. And it's all through history. You know, whenever people come up with new and innovative, people have been burned at the stake way back when for suggesting that the Earth moved around the sun.
Yep.
You know, this is how technology's been suppressed. Knowledge has been suppressed. But look what we've done anyway, Shaziz. I mean, look at what you're doing. Look at what all the, you know, I am one of the biggest fans of garage scientists, and that's what I call
them.
Me too. They're not lettered scientists. They don't work for the universities and the corporations and the governments. These people are free minds, thinkers, and they are creators. And they're going into their garages and they're creating forms of free energy. They're creating forms energy systems just about everything that we use. The solar panels that they have now, shrinking them down to I've seen some that are only like 4 or 5 inches, you know, these panels and stuff. They can put out enough charge, enough energy, if you are in an emergency situation, that will allow you to have a flashlight, a radio, a phone, whatever.
Yep.
You need. People look at this and they think, oh, well, that's just a little gadget because of all the technology we have today. But if you're in a situation where you need to have this information, you need to get in touch with somebody, this becomes a miracle gadget to you, right?
Sure it does. It's awesome.
You know?
And the technology just keeps on getting better. You know, they micro-size it, they make it more efficient. And see, the people, the system, they made a huge mistake when they gave us access to the web, because they unlocked Pandora's box. Now we had access to talk to each other and share information the way they did it, and now there ain't no way for them to close the box up, see? And that's why the struggle for the power of the internet goes on, because they don't want us saying the things that we're saying. They don't want that happening, because, you know, you got to have control of your people. If you can't keep them in the dark about certain issues, then they can run free with their minds and share ideas, and somehow or another maybe one day become so much more powerful than the system itself that the system just becomes obsolete. What do you think?
Yes, I do agree. I've got grandkids running all over me right at the moment. But
it's all right. We've had grandchildren on the radio show many a times. And dogs, and Raymond's air conditioner, and his squeaky chair.
I used to have Ravana's chickens.
Yeah.
And his roosters. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, when we talk today, it's getting noisy in here. When we talk today about technology to people who are, you know, they understand, oh, yeah, technology's responsible for my cell phone. My cell phone works, and so technology's great. Technology gives me cancer-fighting ability in the hospitals. So technology is great. Technology allows me to fly great distances. It allows me to do this and that. But what they don't understand is that this is metered technology. This is stagnant technology. This is a technology that will not take us any further than we are right now, whereas there is a whole world, like you said, of technology waiting to be put out there that's already been developed, that's already been designed.
Let me put a crazy concept out for you. You ever heard of a guy named Raymond Rife?
No.
Well, he designed what was called the Rife machine, which is essentially used frequency waves to cure cancer cells and diseases. And that technology really exists in this world because, you know, everything has its own frequency and you can do certain things with frequency ranges that you wouldn't imagine. Imagine, you know, there's a controversy out there whether or not cell phone technology, because of the range that it's actually in, would be harmful, you know, maybe cause you a tumor if you stay on the phone all day, every day, for the rest of your life or whatever. Imagine being able to transmit data and all the information that you need on a frequency range that would be a healing or a soothing or a calming range. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yes, yes. Yes, I do, and I've thought about that many times, Shaziz. You said something a little bit earlier in the broadcast, and you were talking about, you know, you don't believe in, you wouldn't want transhumanism or something like that, but that that might be where we're heading. If we continue to grow in the areas of technology and in the areas of free form technology, it doesn't matter whether it's for the benefit society or whether it's for the profit society. That is where ultimately our species would end up if you look at it logically.
Yeah.
You were talking about the prosthetics and stuff that we have now. You're looking at transhumanism in its earliest forms.
Yep.
And the benefits to transhumanism is extreme. I mean, it can possibly allow those of us who have been inundated with disease or the soldiers, people who have lost limbs, people who have debilitating diseases and stuff. This can free them. You look at Stephen Hawking, you know, transhumanism is what would give him a new life, able to do so much more than what he's doing right now, sitting in the chair. But there has to be a great responsibility with this.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that.
Yeah, this is where the scary part is for me, that is, if we allow this control system to create our future for us, then I see dark things ahead.
Yeah.
If we are allowed to create this future, then I see wondrous things ahead. You're talking space travel. You're talking the ability to withstand all the rigors, all of the dangers that we face you know, we have people who work mines and stuff today who die because their physical forms cannot withstand the things that they're doing. Technology has a cure for that, but we have to be smart enough to say, do we need this technology to debase and degrade our Earth, or is there a better way we can do it? Well, we have asteroids out there that can be mined, that will not destroy our Earth, that will not destroy planets. But we can't get to them, can we? Because we can't take the rigors of space. We can't get ourselves from here to there safely and in enough time to be able to make it worthwhile.
But see, the brilliance of it all is we can. We just don't. For whatever crazy reason under the sun, people mostly believe that things are not possible because they wrote down what they classify as the laws of physics. And you can't defy the laws of physics, the known laws of physics. You just can't do it. That's what they say.
But Except for it happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, here's a good law of physics for you. Somebody's like driving down the road and they see somebody in danger in a crash car, and for some weird, strange reason, they come over there and literally rip the door right off of the body of the car and pull that person to safety. Now, science can't explain that because the human body should not be strong enough to be able to do that. You know, you would pull a muscle in your arm so fast, but these people come out of there, they're not pulled muscles. They have somehow or another mustered some force of nature that they were literally able to lift a car off the ground to get somebody out from under it, or rip a door off, or do amazing feats of superhuman strength. And so,
well, I think that comes down to frequency.
Yeah.
I think that comes down to, you know, when somebody's in a situation like that, they're not thinking, I can't do that. They're not thinking anything other than what they intend to do. And with that strength of frequency, I think that is the key to everything. Mothers picking up cars off of their children.
Yeah.
News reports of that, you know. This is something that kind of escapes people, but I've thought for a long time that if your thought is pure enough and you put enough of yourself into that frequency and that thought and focus, that you could do anything.
That's why I say I don't believe that there's anything in this world that isn't possible, and that if we want to travel through time and space, all we got to do is make it so. You know, the responsibility issue that you talked about in the beginning is the difference of whether we're going to allow all of our so-called representation of the world to be in charge of said technology, or are we going to utilize this stuff as a people to benefit one another? That's the key right there. And if you allow the system as the system set up, think about for a second now, here in the modern day age, you've got microchips that go inside of computers or inside of a little card, whether it be your driver's license or your bank card or whatever, that keeps a tab on a number, that keeps a tab on all the computers with all your information on it. Access to that information is dangerous in the wrong hands, right? You could all the different things that are available to us right now mostly are controlled in some form or fashion, or at the very least eavesdropped on by the people that are supposedly representing the people of the world. So they know everything there is to know about you. They know about how much money you got, what you buy at the store. It's all documented. The people, on the other hand, you don't have access to that information because it's like, it's regulated. But
well, yeah, and truth is, look at it this way, you know, look at what's being done right now and think logically. You know that we have the technology to do, even just today, the technology that is out there, we can do things better, more responsible. We can heal better. We can build better. We can create energy systems better, more efficient, more beneficial to the whole world. We have the capacity, the capability to feed the world in abundance. We have this now, but it's not being utilized, is it?
No,
it's... What we are given is this antiquated, old, not usable. I mean, the systems that we're under right now that our governments allow us to create, it's like the people who are building off-grid. You have this man, I just posted a article yesterday. This man built his house, and he put the solar panels on his roof. His house was totally efficient and off-grid. And the city is charging him for not using their energy.
Yeah. I see that. Look, there's a reason why mad science exists, because, you know, I'm 52 years old, and I can remember when I was a kid seeing pictures on TV of a starving baby somewhere in the world. And so there was a need for a mad scientist to come out there and say, look, there ain't no reason for nobody to be starving in this world. Look what we have access to. And it frustrates me to the extreme to know that somewhere in this world there's somebody who wants a home that can't get one. There's somebody in this world that needs the clean water to drink that can't have access to it. There's knowledge there that will take and show people how they can literally purify their water and make it healthy to drink again. There's ways by which to irrigate places where you normally wouldn't be able to get water to farm. There are so many different ways, and this world has every bit of resources necessary that if you properly utilize, there wouldn't be no such thing as a starving baby in the world.
Exactly. Exactly. But we don't have that. Every technology that is developed causes devastation in one place or another. And this is technology that is useless to us. We have technologies to replace them right now.
Yep.
Nobody's stepping up. The governments don't want this. So you have to ask yourself, do I continue living under the government rule of I can only use what you allow me to, I can only develop what you allow me to, or do I step up and say I'm going to change things. I am going to create. I am going to build. I am going to share the knowledge that I have so that other people can do this too. This is the situation that we're in now. We don't have to change the government. We have to change ourselves.
Uh-huh, there's the key.
It's not going to change.
That is the key. You hit it right on the head. And I got good news for people. They're already working on solar panels that are see-through. I mean, just crystal clear. It looks just like a piece of glass. And the moment that comes out, man, I tell you what, every single house out there will have a solar panel in the window, and that energy will be pumped into your system. By the time it's all said and done, these people out there that are trying to fight so hard against all the alternative energy people of the world and all the people doing research, they're going to fail, because Pandora's box is already open. There's things out there in existence right now, like I keep mentioning people, how you can take a motor out of a direct drive washing machine, one of the Samsung or Fisher and Paykel models, that it's already a ready-built generator. Right out of the machine, and so even when the thing breaks down, you still can use parts out of it to generate electrical power. And if you understand how to use electrical power in a different fashion than what we're using right now, you can get your heat using what would normally be used called trash electricity. You see what I mean? So,
well, like we guys talked about earlier, as far as vibrations and frequencies and so forth, they did an experiment quite some time back, and they took some speakers that would produce sound underwater, and they started playing rock and roll music at one end of a very large lake. At the other end, they put a submersible speaker in, and they started playing long hair music, you know, Bach, Brahms, Beethoven, that kind of thing. And within a 24-hour period, One end of the lake was full of very small young fish, and the other end of the lake with the long-haired music was full of older, larger fish. I mean, so you were saying something earlier about different frequencies causing people to be excited, this, that, and other, and other frequencies causing people to be calm and so forth. That was the thing that we're trying to prove. And so, Dean, you are 100% correct.
Well, they got weapons of war. You've seen out during protests, they got sound cannons who can put sound out that is so uncomfortable to listen to, or actually makes you have a physical illness in your body because you're standing in front of it. These technologies, if you can do it in the negative realm, also work in the positive realm as well. So you could design a cell phone that would heal your headache while you're talking to your family.
Also, earlier, even, you were talking about studying nature. Well, I just watched here 2 or 3 days ago a documentary. I love watching documentaries. But anyway, they were talking about insects and animals and different aspects that they had that, you know, we could use. For example, the vampire bat. It lives strictly on blood. Well, it finds an animal, bites it, and in its saliva is a chemical that keeps the wound from actually healing up, or the blood from clotting. So the vampire bat doesn't actually suck the blood. It just takes its fangs. It just barely scratches an animal enough to make it bleed. And the saliva keeps the blood from clotting, so it just keeps on bleeding, and the bat sits there and just lifts the blood up. But now when the bat leaves, within a few hours, that particular chemical dries up, and then the wound heals. But scientists have studied that saliva and have synthesized that chemical. They use that in medications for people that have had strokes.
Yep.
A stroke can be more than your blood clotting in a vein. So that keeps the blood from clotting, so that the person, if they get to you, or if you get to the hospital, In less than 2 hours of a stroke, your chances of being coming out of it completely healed.
On that line of what you're talking about, they're
set. You've got 98% cure rate. So what people need to do is learn the symptoms of a stroke that show up before the actual stroke happens, and that happens about 2 hours before the stroke.
Yeah. But when you was talking about learning from nature, you know,
yes.
in medical, there, believe it or not, there are still places where they use fly larvae to clean out a wound, a really deep infected wound.
Absolutely.
And so they've learned that they can use nature to literally do the job that nature would normally do by cleaning up something that, you know, like a dead animal on the side of the road, you know. You see a dead animal on the side of the road and you don't mess with it, within a period of time, there will be vultures over there picking at it, and by the time it's all said and done, and the flies or whatever, nature takes that back, and it's nothing more than a pile of bones laying in on the side of the road. I know that kind of sounds disgusting, but you can see a clear example of how nature literally recycles everything, including you.
You know, the thing is about the fly larvae, which everybody knows the common name, maggots, I mean, they will not eat good flesh. They
nope.
eat only dead, rotting flesh.
Yeah.
That's why they've been used for years cleaning out bad wounds and so forth. Wounds that get infected.
But the key to learn...
eat fresh meat.
The key to learn from all that is that you can learn from nature. Nature will teach you every single thing you need to know on how things work.
Absolutely.
Nature is a perfect system.
Yeah. That's what's so incredible about it. That's why I don't get all stressed out whenever I hear people talking about, you know, the world's going to come to end, because I understand how nature functions. I can see mechanically how everything on this planet works, and it's brilliant. I mean, It doesn't matter how we got here. However you guys, the gals out there, believe we got here, you got to be admitting one thing if you're honest. That if you look around you, the Earth is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It generates more power than we'll ever use in a trillion lifetimes. And long after we destroy each other with our greed and craziness, this planet will continue to do what it does. It'll recycle us into the system. We'll become an energy of some other, might even be a tree next go around. Who knows? But nonetheless.
Well, one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one thing that you can't deny is that this system that we live in, this Earth system, being so complete, being so perfect, everything in its place, for a purpose, everything designed to work in unison with every other part. This is intelligent design.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are.
I agree.
You have to see that, and if you don't,
it wasn't an accident.
You need to rethink. Right.
Yeah, you take a 5,000 piece puzzle and you slam it down on the floor and then pick it all back up and keep doing that. Repeat that process over and see how long it takes for all those pieces to fall in the right place at the right time to show you that big picture. You might get lucky one time out of trillion, quadrillion, billion, or whatever the highest number you can say, but you're gonna be there a while. Now, somehow, some way, some divine entity or higher being or whatever put this planet in our grasp. We were given some of the most amazing gift that all we had to do is learn how to work in harmony with this system that is out there that we call nature. And if we worked in harmony with nature, there is nothing we couldn't accomplish. Nothing whatsoever. And that's what the environmentalists want. That's what the government says they want. That's what the average Joe seems to want. But how do we get everybody to the table to actually enact what we've learned from nature already to make this place literally a heaven on earth, a utopia? It can be done. You know, some people will say, well, you know, it's a long shot. You could never do that. Maybe you can't in this lifetime. But if we started off today, because we're standing at a crossroads with this technology that we have access to, and we teach our children how to be respectful to nature and how to literally build things utilizing what nature's already provided. Look, I can get in a boat and I can ride down the river. I didn't have to do nothing to nature. I didn't have to take nothing away from nature. I didn't even interrupt the flow of that river. I just got on and went for a ride. The same thing if I build me a big old man kite where I can get up here and I can glide on the wind like the birds. I didn't take nothing away from nature. All I did was use what nature was already provided so that I can get from point A to point B and have some fun in the process. Now, if you utilize that knowledge, that advantage that nature has provided, somewhere on this earth right now, there's a doggone thermal vent of epic proportions. Heat coming up out of the ground to such extremes that you can literally melt steel with it. And you can melt bricks and concrete and rocks. That's what lava is. It's melted rocks. You can utilize that heat energy to literally generate the type of energy that you want at any different frequency range that you want. You could find the ones that make you feel sick and never use them again. And you could tell the future generations how to do the exact same thing. You put that type of infrastructure in the hands of the people, and it's not a greed-based system like the system that is basically oppressing mankind. You won't hear words like starving baby anymore. You won't hear words like homelessness or sickness and stuff like that. You'll know that you have finally got it. You have finally figured out what nature was showing you all along, that you helped me and I helped you and we all work together and it's just one. You're part of that beautiful machine, but you're the faulty part of that beautiful machine because you just ain't figured out what nature's been showing you. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And I do believe she is wholeheartedly, 100%. I do believe that if the people were ever allowed the freedom to create the system that we would blow our minds at what we would create. That there would be, we think today that we are something because of the technologies that we have today. They are nothing. They are kindergarten at best compared to what we can and will do.
Oh, man.
When we are allowed.
A perfect example of what you're talking about is something I keep pointing out all the time. In the late 1800s, the Mercury Arc rectifier, I keep coming back to that because in my mind, it is the most brilliant piece of machine that ever was designed, and its initial purpose was just to turn Tesla's high voltage AC into high voltage DC to run Edison's elevator motors. But what they had access to right now, the Mercury Arc rectifier makes the nuclear power plant look like a child's toy. What you could do with that type of technology, that plasma technology today, number one, you wouldn't have to refine radioactive material into highly refined radioactive rods that build tons and tons of radioactive waste, because they, after a certain point, can't use the rods anymore because they're not efficient enough to boil water efficiently. But if you take this plasma technology that was around in the late 1800s, and you expand on it, take away the mercury, which is the dangerous portion, and put in one of the noble gases, you can energize that gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, and take that heat energy off there to literally boil water on demand. You can turn the frequency range up, and the input that you had to put in to begin with is insignificant. Solar panels could do the job. Wind turbines could do the job. An engine that was running designed specifically to run off of water could do the job. And you'd get the steam power that you wanted to turn the turbines to turn the generators. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we need to develop frequency technology. To me, that is just probably the most optimum way of creating anything, because you control the frequency, you control the energy, and you can focus it in any way.
Yeah.
I mean, fuel, water purification, everything on this earth runs in frequency. Everything in this universe runs on frequency. And we have this tool that's free. I mean, frequency is free.
You know something cool, Patty?
You just have to create it.
Right now, we're sitting on a computer system that is able to calculate any known frequency to man. You can literally make sounds on your computer that will destroy your computer because the speakers will end up cracking because the sound is just crazy. And so with that said, you got access to a tool right now where you can run tests of multiple different frequency ranges. They got digital oscilloscopes that you can have put right, a computer program right on your computer that will run simulations of things before you ever even build them. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Nobody's messing with this technology except for the people outside of the movers and shakers.
Yep.
You know? And if they are messing with it, they're not letting you know about it. You know?
You said nobody. Well, I'm somebody, and so is Thomas. And Thomas and I have been working.
I mean nobody in the government, in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
They're not sharing it if they do have it.
All right.
Yeah, NASA and all the big wigs out there, they got some pretty cool technologies that they're not being upfront about, but it's not really necessarily in the average Joe's hands. But in a sense, it kind of is, because you have access to the same tools that they got. And if you want to talk about manpower, the average Joe outnumbers the elite and the governments of the world, and even all the heads of corporations and all that by the thousands.
And yeah.
So if you could get a motivated force of people focused on research and development, man, I'll tell you what, the technology that would be on the streets would be mind-blowing.
It's like what you want to do. Just imagine if you could bring 1,000 people from across the globe together who work on these types of systems. Just think of the potential that we could have if we brought 1,000 garage scientists.
Oh, I'd love it.
To the table.
I would love it. I would love to have, I'd even do it right here on my property. I would love to have a big, giant convention of brilliant thinkers to come out here and have some talks and do some work and stuff to where we could literally get things done. See, when I talk about running a car...
It would be amazing.
Yeah,
it would be amazing.
When I talk about running a car on water, and especially if I talk to somebody who's educated from the book or, you know, from science or physics or mechanical, whatever. They went to college, they learned everything there is about modern day combustion engine, and I talk to them about that. They quote the laws of physics with me and start telling me why it is that this isn't possible and such. Like, for example, you know, you can't compress a liquid. That's why they use liquids in hydraulics to lift up cranes and stuff like that. Well, I'm not suggesting that you do compress a liquid. I'm suggesting that you change the state of matter of that liquid to a gas, and that can be compressed. That can be separated to hydrogen and oxygen and ignited on demand using radio frequencies. And we can utilize the two forces. Water, it may be the most stable molecule on the planet, but it can also be the most destructive or the most helpful molecule on the planet. Heat, on the other hand, is something that we can't do without. We need heat, but heat is one of the things that tears machines apart. It tears your equipment because you're not transferring that heat away from it, and the parts fail because they reach the thermal breakdown point. So properly engineered, I'm saying to specifically run on water, using everything from compression technology to compression ignition to induction heating and so on down the line, even to steam technology and all that. And you could literally design an engine to specifically run off of any type of fuel, just like the diesel engine specified for diesel, the gasoline for gasoline, and so on down the line. You got people who are smart enough to be able to take that diesel engine and use things like French fry oil to make biofuels to run that same engine. So now you took what was specifically designed for one type of fuel and modified it slightly in order to be able to do another type. You can do the same thing with the internal combustion engine. Instead of running a liquid gas in there, you can run propane, methane, and several other flammable gases into the same system, and those ones that run in propane are running more efficiently because of the way that the gas is actually introduced into the combustion chamber. So what's stopping us, people? What's stopping us from excelling? What is stopping us from boldly going where no man has gone before? You gotta stop allowing the system to tell you that you can't do it. You gotta stop allowing the system to make you believe that you're hopeless against all that is going on out there. The reason why the wars are raging on in this world is because of energy and resource. You show me one other reason why anyone's out there going to battle and fighting with each other outside of maybe some ideology, but it is still all basically boils back down to the same exact thing. The ones over there fighting over their belief system are being interrupted with the fights with the people that want the resources that they got over there that they used to fund their fight with. Oil. Now, tell me that ain't ridiculous.
It was something that is ridiculous, and that is to grow corn and then harvest the corn, the ear corn, and take the kernels, which are starch, and turn it into sugar, and then turn the sugar into alcohol. Why don't you grow sweet corn that human beings eat? Like, for example, silver quin. Silver quin corn, the nickname is sugar corn, because there's so much sugar already in it. And the thing is, a lot of people don't know this, but I studied it, and I know it to be a fact. The stalk of the silver quin corn has more sugar in it than the corn itself.
Yep.
And you harvest it while it's still soft in those days.
You know the brilliance in what you're talking about, Raymond?
Growing feed corn and trying to take it and turn the starch into sugar, and then the sugar into alcohol, when, duh, you grow silver queen corn, now you have food for people to eat, but you also harvest the stalk because it's still green, and the stalk has more sugar than the ear of corn.
Yep.
And just squeeze it out, and now you drop the whole process of turning starch into sugar, because you already got the sugar.
You know the brilliance of what you're saying there, Raymond? The brilliance of what you're saying there, what you just pointed out to everybody, it's only a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. It really doesn't even scratch the surface of what we have access to. People mow their lawns all the time. Do you know what you could do with grass clippings alone?
Well, that's another one. I showed you. I took dried grass clippings, you know, that dried in the sun. They still had a lot of moisture. I put them in the microwave and turned on until the microwave started sparking. That means there's no water left. So I took all that dry grass, put it in the coffee grinder, ground it up, and now what do I have? I've got cellulose in a dust form that is as strong as gunpowder. I mean, this stuff will, oh, golly, the power in your grass clippings is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
Stephen Gibbons in the chat room posted a link, and it said it's got this big giant machine, and it said this machine just started sucking CO2 out of the air to save us from climate change. I gotta bookmark that one. That's brilliant. As well, I say that I don't know where he finds all this stuff, but he's my hero. He's my chat room hero.
I think he is, and I think it's absurd that we have a consensus of supposedly intelligent scientists, people who are standing up in front of the world and saying that we are the carbon dioxide is killing the planet, that we've got to stop it. You know, excuse me, but. You're clear cutting forests to the ground, destroying forests all over the world. You're destroying the lungs of the planet, and now you're telling me that the lungs that is remaining, you're going to deny the actual fuel that it needs to live, food.
And
people are saying, people are standing up and saying, oh no, we've got to stop. We've got to stop.
Yeah. On that note,
didn't we learn in school?
What is the byproduct of turning sugar into alcohol? It's carbon dioxide.
Yeah. But on that note,
why can't you take the sugar from the sweet corn? Okay? Eat the corn. Squeeze the sugar out of the stalks. Take that sugar, turn it into alcohol. In doing so, you're going to make carbon dioxide.
Yep.
Put your thing in a greenhouse so the carbon dioxide cannot escape. Then you put your plants in there and let the plants turn the carbon dioxide back into carbon and oxygen.
Yeah. On that note, what you guys are talking about.
Shaziz, you said it over 10,000 times on this show. I mean, the answers are there.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking plug and play here, folks.
Yep.
And play. It's all there. It works. Mother Nature got it.
On that note, what you was talking about, the trees there, Patty, Stephen Gibbons said in the chat room, as Shaziz would say, ridiculousness would rather have a thousand trees doing the same job and how much carbon was released smelting and the steel to create the building on how long until the offset its own creation. Basically, what he said is that they went through all the trouble to build this machine to do what the trees have already been doing for thousands of years.
Right.
You see what I mean?
That's what they do.
Yeah.
They try to mimic nature, and they only destroy our ability, nature's ability to do what it's always done.
Yep.
Nothing that they have created in this system is anywhere near the efficiency and the perfection of nature. Why do they keep trying to reinvent it?
I don't know.
What you just said reminds me of an old saying. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yep, and something Raymond was talking about a second ago about making carbon dioxide. One of the things that people don't understand out there for some reason, I don't know, because we've said it so many times here on the Mad Science Show, you can take many noble gases. You can take carbon dioxide and you can put it in a vacuum chamber. You can send a radio frequency and energize that carbon dioxide into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, and you literally have a fuel that is unlimited. You'll never run out of it. It's not even remotely possible. So, you well, just... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. We've got Sky Blue Eyes. He's in the chat. And he says, biofuel corn oil was the direct cause of the revolution that occurred in Egypt because of the fact there was less human consumption. The price of bread went up 30%+. And the people took to the street because they could not afford to eat. And then below that he says, CO2 is food for plants. We need more CO2, not less. Plants grow better when there is more CO2. And the byproduct, the thing of it here is, look, Sky Blue Eyes is a guy in the UK. He's not a scientist. He doesn't have to find his name. He hasn't gone to college to study nature. But yet, he is clued in. He understands this. Yet we have scientists that have gone and studied and don't have this, or will not admit to this.
That's right.
This is the absurdity of what we're living in.
This is what I was talking
about. Folks, that's why...
Turn sugar into alcohol, you got fuel. But in doing so, then you're producing carbon dioxide. Well, algae eats carbon dioxide, but algae also produces vegetable oil, which is another form of fuel. Come on, folks.
Yeah,
it's fucking play here.
Well, look, folks, we're over our time, and about time to wrap this show up, so I'll give everybody a last say before we peel up out of here. But listen, you're listening to Mad Science, and that Mad Science exists for a reason. It's not called Mad Science for nothing, because when you spend your life and you study everything there is to know about science and mechanical and all that kind of stuff, and then the world says that we got a need and you step up to address that need, and you try to point out to everybody the solution is everybody, it's frustrating to listen to the craziness that comes out of our colleges and our schools systems, and the things that people are saying and arguing and fighting over, when you're trying to sit there and point out to everybody that we got every single thing we need to resolve every single problem on this planet. That's why it's called Mad Science. That's why we bring these brilliant people to the table. That's why we point it out. That's why we put these links in there. And we're not trying to sell you nothing. We're just trying to give you something that's already available. We're just putting it in one nifty little package in this little corner of cyberspace for you to be able to find it when you need an answer. You jump on here and ask somebody, hey, do you know anything about, aquaponics or hydroponics? Sure, we got people that know about it. Now you have a resource readily available on a little network connected to a bunch of other little networks that make up this massive network that we talk to you on. So, with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. You guys got any last brilliant thoughts before we peel up out of here?
One thing I can think of and say is, hey, it's already there. It's on the shelf. It's plug and play.
Yep. What about you, Patty?
No.
Well, I just wanted to let everybody know who's listening in, who will be listening in to the podcast and everything. You're who we're waiting for, are the ones who make the change. We are the only ones who can make the change. And as soon as we decide to do it, it's a done deal. We just have to realize we are the power here. We are the solution here. It's not coming from anywhere else, everybody. It's never going to come from anywhere else. It has to come from me, Shaziz, all of us out here. We can do this. it's not rocket science.
That's right.
It's mad science.
I couldn't say it any better. See, with 9 billion people on this planet, we have the manpower, we have the brain power, we have the creativity, we have the tools, the technology, we have the resources necessary to do that. And if you want it done, make it so. So, Jermaine, you got anything last to throw on here real quick before we bail?
No, at the moment, no.
All right, well, folks, for those of you who don't know Jermaine, a.k.a. Grasshopper, he's a brilliant young man that I'm thinking is going to be beneficial to this future, unlike you can possibly imagine, because there's a lot of people like him out there in this world that have some skills and talents and creativity. And he seems to have this thirst for knowledge, and I'm glad to see it. I want to see more Jermaines out there in this world.
That's for sure.
I want to see people coming to the table of all ages that really want to learn things in life. You know, if you're not getting educated in school, come out here and talk to your brothers and sisters from around the globe. They got research available like you wouldn't possibly believe. I mean, it's just... We talk about resources. One of the most brilliant resources on the planet is each and every piece of the puzzle, which is you. So, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. If you like this podcast, help us out by spreading this podcast. If you want to replay any section of it, or copy it, or cut it, paste it, whatever, take the best of the best and make you the best show you can. And put it out there to the people, because that's how it is. The power is in the knowledge and the will. If you believe it can be done, it can be done. If you don't believe it can be done, it'll never get done, period. So with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.